This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. We are with RotoWire.com. Awesome, awesome, fun game last night. And I'm not talking about the Athletics versus the Brewers game. That was fun and surreal and dumb, and we'll talk about that as well. But got to talk a lot of NBA tonight. We are going to do an NFL version of What's More Likely to Cash. We're going to talk some hockey with AJ Schultz. And we got a full slate of baseball games. So we got a lot to talk about today here. As always, folks, you can get Prop Points on podcasts, whether that's on Spotify, whether it's on Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for if you're joining us via streaming on YouTube TV or listening on Sirius XM as well. Nick, fun game three. Wild back and forth game. Really entertaining game. Clutch performance by the Spurs at the end of the game. De'Aaron Fox with a big shot at the end of the game there. I had a lot of back and forth in this one. I was really thoroughly entertained by this one.
Yeah, I think we're 3 for 3, Jeff, in just really, really good games that have been, you know, kind of wire to wire classics so far in these finals. You know, I think both the Eastern and the Western Conference finals, I know we went to 7 games in OKC, San Antonio, but it was not exactly a riveting series after that crazy game one. Obviously, the New York Knicks ended up running away with their series over the Cavs, but this has been great. It's been a great finals so far through 3 games, and now we're at least guaranteed to get to a game 5. I thought this was a pretty big missed opportunity by the New York Knicks, Jeff. You know, I think you could say the same for San Antonio in game 2, where, you know, they were in position to win that game. They were arguably in position to win game 1 as well, and finally were able to close it out down the stretch. You mentioned some of those clutch shots. I mean, De'Aaron Fox, of course, hitting that mid-range. I thought Stephon Castle, when he was just kind of throwing a grenade with like 2 seconds left on the shot clock, I believe there was maybe just over a minute left.
Huge possession.
And he just had to throw up that 3 from the wing. That was huge, but really, the biggest thing, Jeff, was the New York Knicks, who once again got off to another slow start. I mean, that's been something that I've been tracking on the San Antonio side of things. They built a double-digit lead in the first quarter in 5 straight games dating back to the West Finals. They've done it in 7 of the last 8. Like, they are the team that really comes out, looks a little bit more settled early on. The Knicks had some of the worst turnovers you will ever see in a high leverage NBA finals game. I was looking at the numbers. I think they had 7 or 8 at the half. And I'm like, man, it feels like they had 14 or 15 because of how bad some of those were, just throwing the ball away. You know, first 2 possessions of the game, they turn it over. They come out after halftime, turn it over again, and gave the Spurs some momentum to get back into the game when it felt like New York, the way they closed the second quarter, were maybe on the verge of running away with this thing. But the Knicks offense went totally cold, Jeff. We once again saw a very Brunson-centric attack offensively. His usage rate was hovering around 40% last night. That's all well and good. He's their best player. He's still not shooting efficiently enough for some of these secondary options to be as uninvolved as they were for much of that second half.
Yeah, for sure. And the Knicks went through a really long cold stretch. The first like 10 minutes of the fourth quarter were just miserable. Miserable offense from the Knicks.
Horrible.
After like just like incredible second quarter, very fun and engaging third quarter, and then they just fell apart there at the end until the last couple of minutes, of course, where they couldn't miss anything. The Knicks had a couple of bailouts of their own. I mean, they had the possession where they got blocked twice, and then it got knocked out of bounds. That, you know, Brunson throws up a prayer as the shot clock goes up, it goes in. Of course it goes in. They get the timeout and they're down. They get the quick 3 of 2.5 seconds, forcing San Antonio there. The Castle one, though, I'm glad you pointed it out, because it was a terrible possession by the Spurs before that. All they did was just like dribble around the perimeter. It was like watching Northwestern basketball there. I've seen a lot of that there. Bad end game offense. And it's like, they're just trying to draw out the clock. They weren't trying to score, and I thought they shut it down too soon. And they had those 2 huge bailout shots, the Castle shot and the Fox shot. Those were big. It really probably shouldn't have been that close. San Antonio missed so many free throws in this game, too, especially early on in this game, where they could have really extended the lead and didn't, because they just kept on missing at the line.
That's true. But Stephon Castle did hit the 2 biggest free throws of the night. And look, going into that, Jeff, I was thinking, like, there is absolutely no way he's making both of these, right? Like, Castle's a fine free throw shooter. Right. He's not Steph Curry by any means, but to step up in that setting, knowing that you need to make both, you do not want New York to have any chance to get a 3-pointer off. And it, you know, the way things were kind of building at MSG, you just felt like, man, we can't give the Knicks an opportunity to tie this game. But to step up and drain both of those as calmly as Stephon Castle did. He was excellent last night, Jeff. I have no bad things to say about Castle. I think he caught a lot of heat for how the first two games went, some of the turnovers, and that even dates back to the Western Conference Finals. He was nails last night from the start. It was awesome to begin the game. I think he made 7 of his first 8 shots. Some of the finishes, his ability to kind of stay on the ground, time it out, force the defender to either commit a foul or kind of wait it out to the point where he finds an opening at the rim. I mean, he had 3 or 4 really, really difficult finishes, both he and Dylan Harper, by the way, where you're watching the replay and just wondering, like, how did he even get this shot up over OG Anunoby, let alone get it to fall into the rim? So a really nice bounce back, I thought, all around for Stephon Castle. But you mentioned it, Jeff. I mean, the Knicks offense going cold, a big part of that was they were missing quality looks from beyond the arc the entire fourth quarter. They were 0 of 12 from three until those 2 3-pointers in the final minute, one by Brunson and then the OG Anunoby 3 from the corner, 0 of 12. Landry Shamet, he's been awesome for this run. He was brutal last night, a minus 20 in 23 minutes. He had some gaffes on the defensive end, some bad fouls, 1 of 7 from beyond the arc, 1 of 8 overall. The one non-three was this just kind of reckless drive where he got blocked at the rim by Victor Wembanyama. If the Knicks just make 1 or 2 of those open threes, they're probably up 3-0 and we're feeling like the finals are over.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right about that there. Mitchell Robinson played 7 minutes in this game. I was a little surprised to see the lack of usage from him. He was involved in that critical overturn where they called the foul on him initially, did the review, and then, you know, wiped out a 3-point Victor Wembanyama, a 3-pointer there and one, and instead turned into an offensive foul against the Spurs. But they barely used him. Instead, we saw a lot of Jordan Clarkson, which we hadn't seen. You know, they had a Clarkson Alvarado combo going for a while there, and it was working. In the second quarter, I think they're kind of grasping at some straws. There's some foul trouble. Brunson had some foul trouble in the third quarter. Bridges had foul trouble early on in this one here as well. So they went small with those two guys, and it actually worked for a while.
Yeah, it did. I mean, Clarkson had some moments, right? He had that crazy kind of end of the shot clock step back three, which, as I tweeted last night, I mean, that people were saying, oh, what a miracle shot. I think they actually used the word miracle on the broadcast. I'm like, have you watched Jordan Clarkson his entire career? Like, that is the type of shot he is more than comfortable taking. He doesn't need it to be the end of the shot clock. Yeah. I mean, that's right in his wheelhouse. So he had some moments. You know, he had a couple big rebounds. Both he and Alvarado, I thought, were really good on the glass. You know, Clarkson did have a brutal turnover after getting a steal that led to a basket for the Spurs. But yeah, it's emblematic, I think, of how this game went early on for the Knicks when, you know, they dug themselves that double-digit deficit in the first quarter. You have some foul trouble. Mike Brown feels like he has to start pushing some other buttons. And, you know, it was Josh Hart who ended up losing minutes in game two. They went a little lighter on Mikal Bridges last night. Bridges was incredible in the second game of this series. Pretty much invisible last night. He only took one shot in the first half. His only made basket came late in the third quarter. I mean, it felt like he made almost no impact. You know, it was fine on the defensive end, but OG Anunoby, I think, kind of felt like the true number two last night behind Jalen Brunson. Quick note on Brunson, Jeff. Like I mentioned, the Knicks have been incredibly Brunson-centric in this series. He's had his two highest usage rate games of the season have come in the NBA Finals. He only had 2 games all regular season where he hit 40% usage rate. He's had 2 of those games now in the finals, 81 shots through 3 games. His usage rate through the first 3 games of the finals on pace for the highest we have seen in a final series for any player since LeBron James in 2015, Jeff. And if you remember that series, that was when Kyrie was out, Kevin Love was out. It was basically LeBron playing 1-on-5 with Matthew Dellavedova, who ended up in the hospital after one of those games.
Yeah. Wild, good call out in the memory there, and also just wild stat to see that so much there. All right, we got to talk a little about what happened in Vegas last night. It didn't stay in Vegas. It flew off the surface of the moon. But first, want to bet smarter? Then you need RotoWire. Our brand new smart money tool shows you exactly where the sharp action is moving, so you're always on the right side of the line. And that's just the start. RotoWire's award-winning staff delivers rankings, projections, real-time injury updates, and data-driven insights across every sport, every day. Whether you're handicapping games, crushing your fantasy league, or both, RotoWire has you covered. Head to rotowire.com right now and use promo code VEASAN at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. That's rotowire.com, promo code VEASAN. Nick, we spent some time talking about the A's having a week-long homestand in Las Vegas and speculating about what it might look like. We weren't even close to speculating on what it might look like last night, at least. I mean, we knew it was going to be a hitter friendly park, but we just thought like, okay, Kyle Harrison, he can overcome that. He's got this. He did not have this. He did not have much help from the defense or the rock hard surface that was that they were playing on there. Some wild bounces of the ball there. I didn't know I had to prepare for the infield and really knowing what the infield surface was like there as part of my equation. But here we are.
Yeah, could not have been more wrong about this. Kyle Harrison immediately gave up a home run to Shea Langeliers. I mean, he just got blown up. I mean, this was far and away his worst outing of the season. Even Ashby, who's been so good for the Brewers this year, he ended up getting shelled in relief to extend the game into extras. Like this felt like a supercharged version of what I watched on Friday night when the Brewers rallied back against Colorado in extra innings. I mean, this was significantly crazier. You had balls flying all over the place. I think Jake Bowers hit a homer that ended up going 470. And accordingly, Jeff, the total for tonight's game has been moved up to 13 at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Some of the player props are borderline comical. Like Shea Langeliers, Brent Rooker, Nick Kurtz are all between plus 167 and plus 185 to hit a home run tonight.
Yeah, there were 11 homers in this game. My favorite, you know, you get the Hard Rock. It's 13.5 is now the over on this one here, the total on this game. The other fun cherry on top of this game is the home plate umpire in this one at one point had 10 out of 11 ABS challenges overturning his ball strike calls there. Everything was bonkers in this game. It really was just a joy, just a surreal joy. I wouldn't want it every night, but let's welcome back Happy Fun Ball. I was there for that. All right, we're going to talk what's more likely to cash NFL style coming up next here on Prop Points.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you'll get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. We welcome those of you watching on SiriusXM Channel 158 or on YouTube TV or listening on SiriusXM Channel 158. We're playing a new game. It's called What's More Likely to Cash?
We're hunting for tickets with a real shot. Welcome to What's More Likely to Cash?
Doing this NFL style today for What's More Likely to Cash. Michael Cohen went through the NFL futures market, picked out a few individual player futures here. We're going to jump right into it here. Starting off, Matthew Stafford versus Dak Prescott. All odds via the DraftKings Sportsbook. Nick, what's more likely to cash? Matthew Stafford over 3,999.5 passing yards, minus 110, or Dak Prescott with the same number, also minus 110.
All right, so which of these quarterbacks is more likely to hit 4,000 yards is essentially what we're asking here. Now, both players cleared this a year ago, and there were only six quarterbacks in the NFL who reached 4,000 passing yards. Those were Stafford, Prescott, Jared Goff, Drake May, Sam Darnold, who I would not have guessed, and the people's quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, got to 4,000 yards. So Stafford was over 4,700. Dak was over 4,500. Dak has cleared this in every healthy season since 2018. But the caveat here, of course, is that he's had three seasons in that span where he's missed enough time to knock him well under 4,000. And this is a high enough number for a quarterback where you probably can't miss more than one game, maybe two, if you're on a really high pace to have any chance to break 4,000. Stafford went under this number in 16 games in 2024. He led the league, of course, with over 4,700 in 17 games a year ago. I will say that the competitiveness of both of these divisions, especially the NFC West and really the NFC at large, I'm not really worried about either team, even the Rams, who have probably the best roster in football, running away with like the number one seed to the point where they wouldn't have to play in week 18. So really it comes down to health. That's the question. Which of these two do you trust more? It's tough because Stafford's older. He had arm issues going into last year. Dak has had more of the in-season injuries throughout his career. I'm going to say Matthew Stafford. I trust his style a little bit more. I feel like Dak has been a little bit more injury prone. I think both of these guys go over if they stay healthy, but forced to pick one or the other, I'll take Matthew Stafford. All right, Jeff, we're looking at some win totals for the next one, and we are going to your division, the AFC North. What is more likely to cash? The Ravens going over their win total at 11.5, that's plus 115, or the Cincinnati Bengals going over 10.5, also plus 115.
Noteworthy that both teams fell well short of the mark last year. Ravens 8-9 last year fired their head coach. It's the beginning of a new era in Baltimore. It's the beginning of the new era in the entire AFC North, except for in Cincinnati somehow. But Jesse Minter has replaced John Harbaugh as a head coach. I want to be optimistic about the Ravens. They're like the standard, the gold standard in the division. They're with Lamar at quarterback. They're always a live threat. 11.5 is a big number, though. It's a really big number. They're trying to replace their center, Tyler Linderbaum. He signed with the Raiders. They didn't get one in the draft. They didn't really get one in free agency. I have some question marks about this offensive line for Baltimore there. Their interior offensive line wasn't that good last year. And I don't know if it's going to be good this year. It's something I'm going to be watching really closely here, because I think that if there's one thing that might be an issue there, it's that. I know they spent draft capital on that in the first round, obviously, with Ione, but at the same time, I don't know. Meanwhile, the Bengals, it's the defense. The defense was horrific last year, and they went 6-11 with Joe Burrow being out, especially. They combined no Joe Burrow plus a bottom -5 defense. They were worse than a bad defense. They were the worst. But they uncharacteristically spent in free agency. Boye Mafe, Jonathan Allen, Cook at safety. Plus, there's always their version of the all-in, them going all-in, trading for Dexter Lawrence. I'm going to be accused of being a homer here. I'm going to say the Bengals are more likely to cash. Factor in a very easy schedule, #3 schedule, according to Warren Sharp. So going to go Bengals more likely to cash. All right, Nick, we'll pivot back to you for our next version of this here. What's more likely to cash? Kyren Williams over 9.5 rushing TDs, minus 125, or Amarian Hampton over 7.5 rushing TDs, same price. It's the battle of the LA running backs. I'm really looking forward to this one. What do you got?
Yeah, this is my favorite one that Michael Cohen put in here. And much like the Dak and Stafford one, you know, I think if both of these guys stay healthy, it's very realistic that both could go over their number. Kyren Williams had 10 touchdowns a year ago. He had 14 the year before. He had 12 in 2023. So he's gone over this number now in three consecutive seasons. Now, Amarian Hampton, of course, as a rookie last year, finished with just 4 rushing touchdowns, which did lead the Chargers, by the way, Jeff. They had only 10 rushing touchdowns as a team last season, one of the fewest in the NFL. Hampton was dealing with that ankle injury from week 5 onward. He came back later in the season, didn't quite look like himself, but I'm kind of in on a healthy version of Amarian Hampton, the Mike McDaniel effect as your new OC in LA, just a lower number, of course, at 7.5, getting that same minus 125. I think if you were putting a concern out there for Kyren Williams, it would be losing touches even more so than he did last season to Blake Corum. You know, the split in the red zone was about 65-35 in favor of Kyren Williams, which is fine. But, you know, we've seen Blake Corum trim into that workload over the last 2 years. Obviously, there's a level of investment in Corum, and I think we like what we've seen from him on a per-carry basis. The other thing I worry about with the Rams, Jeff, is that Matthew Stafford threw a ton of touchdowns deep in the red zone a year ago. 18 right. touchdowns inside the 5-yard line. 11 of those came from the 1 or the 2-yard line. Devontae Adams had 9 receiving touchdowns alone inside the 5. Now, the Rams led the NFL in red zone trips with 76, 8 more than any other team, 19 more than the Chargers. So because of that, Kyren was still top 5 in the NFL in carries inside the 10-yard line. But you do wonder if there's maybe just a little regression there year over year. Amarian Hampton, to me, if he stays healthy and doesn't get to 8 touchdowns, Jeff, the Chargers have much, much bigger issues. I mean, 16 running backs, including Tyler Algier, got to 8 touchdowns a year ago. Again, Chargers only had 10 rushing touchdowns as a team last year. They were 29th. In red zone conversion rate. Only Houston, the New York Jets, and the New Orleans Saints were worse. I think a lot of that is remedied this year with Mike McDaniel stepping in. So what's more likely to cash? To me, Omarion Hampton over 7.5 rushing touchdowns. All right, folks, real talk. Every week we sit here, we break down the players, we call the shots, we tell you who's going to ball out this summer. And every week, a bunch of you are in our replies, absolutely convinced you could do better. Fair enough. Here's your chance to prove it. Today's episode is brought to you by Sport.Fun, a free-to-play fantasy game built around the upcoming summer tournament. Pick the players you think are going to deliver, draft your squad, join leagues, and compete for a share of over $30,000 in prizes. $30,000, free-to-play, no catch. And if you really back yourself, there's a pro version where you can play with real cash. Same game, just higher stakes. We've set up an official RotoWire League on the free side, so you could go head-to-head with us and the rest of the listeners and settle this once and for all. Sign up at football.fun, join the RotoWire League, and back yourself. Think you could call it better than us? Now's your chance to prove it. Terms and conditions apply. Playing a game of what's more likely to cash here on Prop Points with some NFL futures. Jeff, we're heading back to the win total market, and I'm going to give you the Chicago Bears over 9.5 wins, the Pittsburgh Steelers over 8.5 wins, both of these even money at DraftKings. Which is more likely to cash?
All right, Michael Cohen really turned the screws on us on this one here, because I think the answer might be neither. I think you and I are in lockstep on this one. The Bears, they found ways to win games that they had no business winning. I mean, a couple different times. I mean, the miracle against the Packers would be one that just jumps off of the page. Whether you're talking regular season or in the playoffs, pick your miracle win. That's fine. They still don't. I think their defense got worse over this offseason. They had to really invest a lot of their currency, both in free agency and in the draft, on replacing Drew Dolman at center. I think that really hurt their ability to rebuild their pass rush, which I really think they need to do. I think their defense is not very good at all. It's really going to be, I think, a question of, can they get some of this young talent up to speed quickly, and how good are they truly? But the Steelers, they saw what they did the last 5 years and said, let's just do the same thing, except we'll put a different coach there with Mike McCarthy. I don't know. Both are in really hard divisions. I don't think the AFC North at least has Cleveland, which will probably struggle again, especially now that they trade away Myles Garrett. But because of that, I'm going to say the Steelers. I'm not enthusiastic about this there. They'll probably get to 9 again, and we'll be unenthused about it again. Can I show my disdain a little bit more for that? I don't know. Is it possible? I'll go the Steelers more likely to cash, but it's not an overwhelming endorsement here.
All right, fair enough.
Nick, let's finish this. Steelers. I got one more for you here. Sorry, it's a dramatic pause. Emeka Buka versus T. Higgins receiving yards. 874.5 is the number, same price, -110. What's more likely to cash?
All right, I'll go quick here. It's a Buka for me. He's only going into year two, so we don't have a health history to look back on. We do with T. Higgins. We know it feels like every other year he misses enough time to basically knock him out of the race. At the pace that Abuka was on early last season, he could go over this number in 12 or 13 games. He doesn't have to play all 17. I expect better out of him. I think we see first half of Eka Abuka next year. So that is more likely to cash on the receiving yards. More VSiN, more prop points coming your way next. Talking some hockey with AJ Scholes when we come back.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. We're still buzzing off of Game 3 on Saturday night in Vegas. We finally get a Game 4 after a couple of long nights off. They needed an extra day off just to recover from that game. We bring in RotoWire's AJ Scholes. He's our hockey editor over at RotoWire. You can follow him at Twitter at AJScholes24. AJ, welcome. Thanks for joining us. What an incredible Game 3. I know a lot of late nights for people following that game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. Double overtime, the come from behind, being down 3-0 and battling back. Just an absolute exciting game, and really just hoping for more of that, more of the same. I'm not overly invested in either team, so I'm looking for 7 games and, hey, as many overtimes as we can get.
Is there a mental advantage right now or a psychological advantage for either team, AJ? Because, you know, we saw a somewhat similar script in game two where Vegas gets out to a lead. Carolina storms back. They end up winning that game. They almost do the same in game three, but you come up short. You know, is there anything you can really take from the first three games of this series at large as far as, okay, which team do you kind of trust more in these clutch moments?
I think the biggest thing for me is that they've proven that home ice really isn't going to matter in this series. They split it in Carolina. I would imagine Vegas or the Hurricanes come out tonight to try and split it here in Vegas too. And it's going to be more, more about what they can do on the ice than what they're hearing in the crowd. I do think Vegas gets a slight edge, of course, mentally when you win an overtime game like that. But I think it probably would have been more impactful if Carolina had completed the comeback. For them, you know, they battled back, they come up short. You can kind of write that script off a little bit. You're on the road, of course. But to lose that lead, to have lost that game in double overtime at home, I think would have been a bigger hit for Vegas. I think they needed to win that game three more than Carolina did.
Let's start looking at game four here. Let's look at some of the factors that we might be driving this here. How would you attack the spread and the total for tonight? Let's start off at the top here.
For me, I don't really want to touch the spread. I'm predicting we'll get another one goal game here. So I guess maybe from that standpoint, you would look, take Vegas plus 1.5, but there's just not enough value to really make that worthwhile with it possibly, going the other way. I do think the total is absolutely in play. It's sitting at 5.5, and I'm definitely surprised by that when you look at the results we've had. So far, all three games have gone over that 5.5 mark. I expect we'll continue to see heavy offense there. So for me, the total and the over, even giving up a little juice on that, is absolutely in play. The spread is a no touch for me. Even the money line, they're both, minus 115 for Carolina, minus 105 for Vegas. It's too much of a coin flip, in my opinion, to risk that. I think we're going to see a tight one goal game. And I would imagine, 5-4, 4, 4-3, something in that range that hits the over.
Talk with AJ Scholes, one of our hockey experts at rotowire.com. He joins us on the Progressive guest line. So maybe not a ton of value in the sides tonight, AJ, but I know you have some props loaded up for this game, including a couple point scorers. So tell us about Stankoven and tell us why you're in on Mitch Marner.
Well, absolutely. Mitch Marner has been the key to Vegas in the entire postseason and in this series. He had the hat trick in the most recent game there. The fact of the matter is he's got more multi-point games in the postseason than he doesn't. So to be able to get him at 2+ points at plus 160 is pretty good value there. He's got 10 goals in the postseason so far. So anytime goal scorer coming in at plus 220, I love both of these Marner props. Maybe you want to slide a little bit to the points one just in case he comes out and gets a pair of assists. But I think either one of those options is in play. On the Carolina side, my favorite here, as you mentioned, Logan Stankoven, over a point at minus 115. He's been their best player throughout the postseason and really put together some strong outings along the way. Had an assist in game three, had a goal in game two as well. So he's certainly capable of racking up points for them, and to only give up a very small amount of juice at minus 115 for him to pick up a point is a great value play, in my opinion.
Got a couple more props from AJ to talk about, but first, the World Cup is days away. Don't miss your chance to win $1 million. Entries close Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Splash Sports is offering $1 million guaranteed in a high-stakes survivor contest. $1,000 to enter, $1 million on the line. You can only use a team once. Pick wisely from the group stage all the way through the knockout rounds. Outlast everyone else, and the million is yours. Right now, new players using promo code VSIN get a 50% deposit match up to $100, a free quick picks entry up to $20, plus 100% quick picks payout boost on an entry up to $20. Entries close Thursday, June 11th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Don't wait. Head to splashsports.com/VSIN and use code VSIN. Must be 21 years or older, available in select states only. So we got double overtime in game three. Can we get another overtime game tonight? Do you like the price to pay to get to overtime?
I absolutely love this play to get the game to go to overtime. You're getting plus 275 value here, which is phenomenal when you consider two of the three games have already gone to overtime. And I get, you know, hot streaks fall off eventually, but I think this is one that's worth taking. These teams, really, they're just built so similarly. They're built around very deep teams, defensively, you know, minded in a lot of ways. Although we have seen a lot of goal scoring, they're both capable of getting production from their third lines, offensive production, or even their fourth. So I think because these teams are so similar, because they're built in so stylistically the same way, banking on another overtime is not that outrageous when you're getting nearly 3-1 on the price. And we've seen it in two out of the three games.
All right, AJ. So sounds like you think we get a fast paced game. You think we get a high scoring game. We like the over 5.5. I mean, you suggested this could be maybe a, you know, 7+ goal game overall. Are there any other ways we could play into that in the prop market? You know, you've given us some point scores, some goal scores. Would you look at the shots on goal market, for instance?
Yeah, I definitely think there's some plays you can target in the shots on goal. One of the ones that seems most obvious to me is to get Mitch Marner over 1.5 shots. He's certainly their best player so far in the postseason here. You can get that at around minus 120. I think that's absolutely in play there. Another option, just to go, you know, kind of deeper here, is the top goal scorer for the series. And who's going to be the leading goal scorer here? Obviously, Marner comes in at the favorite at plus 185, but Brett Howden comes in at plus 310. This guy has scored more goals in the postseason than he did during the regular season, has been absolutely just lighting him up for Vegas here, plus 310, as I said, for him to lead the series. The one I love the most on here, not to just circle back to the same names, but Logan Stankoven comes in at 25-1. For series leading goal scorer. He's only got one so far, but that only puts him two behind, and he's got 10 overall. That's as many as Mitch Marner. So I think he's absolutely in play there as well to target there.
AJ, my Detroit Red Wings have the longest playoff drought in the NHL. It's now 10 straight years. Dylan Larkin, their captain, asked for a trade demand, requested a trade. It's got a full no trade clause, so we can even dictate who he goes to. He gave the Wings a three-team list: Vegas, Minnesota, and Florida. How is this even going to work?
Well, look, I mean, wouldn't we all, you know, if you're in the league right now, wouldn't they all want to go to one of those three teams? You've got Florida, right? Has been dominant, winning cups of late. Yes, they had a down year this year, but half the roster got hurt. Vegas is playing in the final right now. Minnesota is a really strong team. So it's kind of an absurd list to only give them three. I think if I'm Steve Yzerman running that program, I'm like, all right, buddy, we'll see you at practice. Like, I'm not trading you to one of these three teams. Let's be realistic here. He's got 5 more years left on his deal. Come to me with some better offers, some better options. There's more than three teams in the league who could be, you know, viable touch points for him. Carolina even could be an option. But you also have picked teams that have like cleaned out the cupboard in Vegas and Florida. They don't have the resources to be able to trade necessarily for something that Detroit's going to want to do. So if I'm running the show there in Detroit, I'm telling him, sorry, buddy, this is not going to work. You better show up on, you know, for training camp in September.
They don't, or do they have the cap room for that matter too? I mean, the Wild just extended McCarron, for crying out loud. So, I mean, they're tight on that too. So you see this all the time in pro sports where, you know, the trade demand with the narrow list of teams, it makes it very difficult. You try to pick your spot. I'm thinking like Dame, for instance, in basketball, to make the Nick Whalen cross-sport comparison that we always do. AJ, great stuff as always. Really appreciate you coming on board with us today, and we'll do this again sometime soon.
Yeah,
coming
absolutely.
Up next on Prop Points. All right. Coming up next on Prop Point, we got a full Major League slate, 15 games. We'll do some of our favorite plays for that as well, along with our best of the day. This is Prop Points.
watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson back with you. It's the Tuesday edition of Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. Finishing out the show, taking you through a full baseball slate tonight. Talked a little bit about maybe the wildest game of the season, Jeff. That was game one between the A's and the Brewers in Vegas last night. So we'll get some plays on the card for that game. But want to start out in Baltimore, Jeff, where we have Logan Gilbert taking on the lefty Trevor Rogers. Seattle -122 on the money line, total coming in at 8.5. And you have a Julio Rodriguez prop to start us off.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one here. Wind's blowing out. It's warm. 14-mile-an-hour wind blowing out. Trevor Rogers has a 6.29 ERA and a 1.51 whip. Seattle has a top five offense over the last 30 days as well. 1.15 WRC plus. All of this points to a lot of offense here. Now, the one thing one caveat is typically the Mariners are better against right-handed pitchers than they are lefty pitchers. For instance, Luke Rayleigh doesn't get to really play a whole lot against lefties. But Julio Rodriguez in particular has a 6.23 slug against left-handed pitchers. He's a better hitter on the road typically than at home. We talked about the weather conditions. I'm going to pile on. I'm just going to go J-Rod over 2.5 hits plus runs plus RBI plus 127 over at DraftKings.
In the AL East, we have the Red Sox on the road in Tampa Bay. Peyton Tolley, the lefty on the hill, taking on Nick Martinez. Kind of a fun pitching matchup in this one, Jeff. What do you like?
It is an interesting pitching matchup here. Peyton Tolley's been really good. Better of the two lefties, young lefties on the Red Sox. Connelly Early got the better starts last year and made the team out of spring training. Tolley had to apply his wares in AAA for a month before getting the call. But he's been excellent. 2.28 ERA, 0.97 whip, 27% K percentage against just a 7% walk percentage since getting the call. Fantastic. And they got two good pillars there in their future rotation. In a season that hasn't gone well for the Red Sox, at least they have that going for them. Nick Martinez has had a great year, but at the same time, he had six earned runs allowed against the Tigers in that home series sweep by the Tigers against them. Over just four innings in that outing there. He doesn't strike anybody out. He doesn't walk anyone. He just puts a lot of balls in play. I think that kind of is okay as a skill set against the Red Sox, but they're a much better hitting team on the road than they are at home. WRC plus on the road is 99. 100 is your index. It's indexed against 100. At home, it's only 80. They actually have a winning record on the road. I'm just going to go back totally on this one here on the money line. Red Sox -115. Over at Hard Rock is the best price I could find on the Red Sox. Shop around. You might be able to find a better price. You keep looking around on this one here.
Very interested to get your thoughts, Jeff, on Dodgers Pirates in Pittsburgh tonight. We have a huge mismatch in terms of the pitching. Eric Lauer going for the Dodgers, Paul Skenes for Pittsburgh. So we have the Pirates as home favorites against the LA Dodgers, slightly -112 on the money line. Total is at 8.5. We got some injuries I know we need to keep an eye on the Pirates side of things. We also need to consider that Paul Skenes has not made it through or made it out of the fifth inning, I should say, in his last four outings, 4.95 ERA in that span. He's still looking like Paul Skenes. The results have not been nearly as clean as they were early in the season. So how do you factor all that in? Do you have to take the Dodgers here as an underdog?
Yeah, I think you asked me yesterday, do we take take a principal bet on the A's and the Brewers? I think this is another one of those. Do we take the Dodgers as an underdog at a principal? I think the answer is yes. I think in this one here, it's a tough debate because Eric Lauer, I mean, there's nothing pointing to us being excited about him. The record, 5.74 ERA, 1.38 whip. If you use Stuff Plus, he always rates among the bottom five pitchers in baseball, but you still get the Dodgers lineup. And I think you get the Dodgers bullpen, which is went on a massive hot streak before this past weekend. I just think and meanwhile, like you said, Skenes has been merely mortal over his last four starts, 15 runs. He's had four unearned runs. So the ERA hasn't been hurt too bad in that stretch there, but it's not like he's been on a quick hook either. The pitch count, he threw 109 pitches in his last time out against the Astros, 103 the time before that. We're speculating earlier in the season. Is he like being more efficient, trying to get fewer strikeouts? And the answer is no right now. Well, maybe it was earlier there. Something else to watch for here, too, health-wise for the Pirates. Brandon Lau didn't play in the last game against the Braves, got hit by a pitch on the kneecap. He is day-to-day in this one here. I'd watch that one carefully. O'Neill Cruz didn't start either with the hand thing. He did come in later on in that game. I think you're getting the plus 100. You're getting plus money on the Dodgers on a money line. I think you got to go with it here in this case. And best, I saw that at FanDuel was the best price I saw.
Got Garrett Cole on the hill tonight for the New York Yankees. They're on the road in Cleveland. Cole, of course, took a loss against this Guardians team less than a week ago. Slay Ciccone on the other side of that pitching matchup. What do you like in Yankees guards?
This is kind of a vibes pick. Cole got knocked around a little bit by the Guardians last time out, but it wasn't terrible either. And I just think that this is a bounce back situation for him here. I know that the Guardians are kind of pesky. They're annoying. They do draw walks. They don't really hit for a ton of power, though. I'm going to go Cole under 2.5 earned runs on this one here. I'm going to go under. It's at minus 125 over at DraftKings, under 2.5 earned runs for Garrett Cole.
We get Zach Wheeler versus Dylan Cease tonight. Phillies Blue Jays from Toronto. Phillies minus 115 on the money line. 7.5 is our total. So Dylan Cease, first game back from the IL, did make just one rehab start. What do you expect to see from him after the layoff?
He only threw 75 pitches in his first rehab, his first and only rehab start. But man, he's been so good this year. 35.7% K percentage. That's 92 strikeouts over 62 innings. I think if you're looking to play a strikeout prop with Cease, and I am, how many pitches is he going to throw? Can he go to 90? Can he go to 95? If so, that'll probably be enough for him to get over 6.5 strikeouts. Phillies strike out nearly 25% of the time over the last 30 days, even when they've been playing better ball. You know, they're really playing a lot better since they fired Rob Thompson. They hired Don Mattingly as the interim manager. But yet, the offense really hasn't perked up that much. It's been the pitching side of things that's carried them. So I'm not going to play with the line, the side here on that one there. I'm just going to go to the Dylan Cease over 6.5 Ks, minus 128 over at FanDuel. Quick note on Wheeler. He's been incredible since coming back from thoracic outlet syndrome. 2.31 ERA, 0.83 whip. If you're in the AL right now, he may be a top five AL Cy Young candidate. But because he's in the AL and we have so many other good stories, including, you know, the Miz, you're talking about his teammate Christopher Sanchez. He isn't top five right now, but watch to see what happens over the second half of the season. I have some regret that I don't have any Wheeler in my fantasy teams.
Wheeler 40-1 right now in the National League. Did see Kyle Harrison take a bit of a tumble after last night's outing. He is now at 50-1. Cam Schlittler, still your leader in the AL, plus 175 over at DraftKings. Let's hit up Cardinals-Mets in Queens. This is a 7:10 p.m. Eastern start. Mets minus 131 on the money line. Total sitting at 8 for Dustin May versus Freddie Peralta.
Yeah, Freddie Peralta pitching a little bit better, but he has allowed some home runs. 5 home runs in the last 5 games. Did get a win, just allowed 1 run in his last start. Dustin May, I want to pay a little attention to Dustin May. Give him some flowers here. 9-9-7 in strikeouts in his last 3 outings. 25 in his last 3 starts. Most of the strikeout lines against the Mets have him at 4.5. You can five a 5.5 over at MGM and get plus money. It's a question. Do you want the lower prop and the higher price, or do you want the higher prop and get some plus money on it there? I think I'm going to go with Dustin May over 5.5 Ks, plus 105 over at BetMGM. Also, point out that the RotoWire Smart Money tool really likes Lars Nootbaar to hit a home run today. You know, I'm limited to some of the places that you can, where I can cite them, because, you know, it's the viable sports book. So best price I could cite for us is plus 575 at MGM. Check your locality, though. You might have some better odds at other markets there. Use that RotoWire Smart Money tool to see it help you find those markets as well for your locality. But Lars Nootbaar off the IL now, home run prop plus 575.
All right, Jeff, before we get to our best bets, we got to get something on the card for Brewers A's round 2. I asked you yesterday, do we have to take the over? Do we have to, you know, go under on principle with Kyle Harrison out there? All that is thrown out the window after what we saw last night. Are you doing anything with this total sitting at 13?
Yeah, it started. I looked last night and it was at 12 and it's already 13. I've seen Hard Rock already push it up to 13.5. I don't think it. I think I might play the over if I was going to play anything there. I think it'd be. And let's face it, it's more fun to root for overs too, as it is, unless you're a pitching aficionado. So, The over, I'd find the best price in the over if I'm going to play anything or play one of the individual players.
All right. All right. I'm all for it, by the way. I want to embrace the variance in park factors. I think a 15-14 game every now and then, I think that's totally good for baseball. This is the only major sport where the dimensions of the playing surface change depending on where you are. I have no problem with having to embrace some of those variables. On the way out, Jeff, best bet of the night. What do we got?
It's going to be that C strikeout prop over 6.5 strikeouts, -128 at FanDuel.
No NBA tonight. Give me Julio Rodriguez to record an extra base hit against the O's, +145 over at DraftKings. That's going to wrap the Tuesday edition of Prop Points. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Money Moves coming up next. It's the Sports Betting Network.